Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister, officials from Gauteng and Northern Cape. We'll give it another 5 minutes. I see there are still a few members that are trying to log in. So we'll give it another, at 13:05, we will hand over to Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Afternoon, Llewellyn. Afternoon, everybody.
Afternoon, Chairperson.
How many people that we have now from the committee?
Chairperson, we now have 6 members of the portfolio committee. And I also know that Honorable Dr. Tembekwai is just busy logging in now. So we have 7. We should be able to proceed, Chair.
Okay, can we then do a roll call?
Thank you, Chairperson. From the Portfolio Committee, we have yourself, Honorable Binko Gigaba. We have Honorable Aduvins. We have Honorable Siwela. We have Honorable Machezi, Honorable van der Walt, Honorable Mashabela. And like I said, Honorable Dr. Tembekwai is busy loading as we speak. I've got 2 apologies, Honorable King, Honorable Sukers from the Portfolio Committee, and then I also have an apology for the Minister. I have got an indication from the Deputy Minister's office that she is joining us, but she may have to leave a bit earlier. And then I've also just received an apology from MEC Lesufi, who couldn't have another commitment due to the changing time. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, DPE, is the DM that is leading me?
I am present.
Yes, DM.
I am present. As it was indicated, the minister will not be attending. And then MEC Lesufi, because all of us, we had to shift some things for the portfolio committee that was supposed to be starting in the morning. I also shifted my other things. So MEC Lesufi cannot be available now. He was available in the morning, but the HOD is present. The MEC from the Northern Cape is available, is in the meeting, and also the HOD. So in the department, the DG is traveling. He will be part of the meeting, but would be disturbed because he's in the Northern Cape, traveling there. Sometimes the network will cut him, but we have all the delegation that is always there, starting from Mr. Mahada, coming to CFO is in the meeting from the DBE side. Like I indicated that in Northern Cape, I don't see the minister from Western Cape, Northern Cape has joined, but minister from MEC from Gauteng will not be part of the meeting, but the HOD is part of the meeting and will do the presentation, and our sincere apologies. And Chair, I'm also flying to Kimberley at 3:00. My flight leaves at 3:00. So I'll be part of the meeting until first time where I get disturbed, but I am in the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, DM. Now I think we need to apologize for changing the time as well, because we scheduled, like, you know, our meeting are scheduled from when we draw the program, but then we were asked by the Chief Whip office to attend a meeting that was special and urgent this morning from 9 to 12, which then clashed with this one, and we were informed it was compulsory. So for that reason, then we decided to change the time for this meeting. I hope and trust that our apology is accepted. Now that we have all the apologies, can we adopt the agenda? On the agenda we've got today, Northern Cape and Gauteng presenting on the impact of COVID-19 on schooling, and also the AXA how did they deal with the Auditor General's findings. And then we will consider and adopt the minutes of the previous meeting. Can I get someone to move for the agenda?
Chair?
Yes.
Honorable Adjuns.
Honorable
Adjuns.
My apologies. Any seconder?
Okay, I do move for the adoption, Chair.
Okay. Any seconder?
Can I second, Chair?
No, Gabe. It can't be you. Members of the committee, okay. Where are they?
I will second.
All right, Honorable Matthias, thank you very much. DM, can I then hand over to you?
My apologies, sir. It's not a time.
Okay. Also part of the meeting. Oh, sorry, can you do your roll call then?
Huh?
So what do they do back to the bar and try not to get caught?
By what?
By the people at work.
Oh, I thought you said that. You said you can take any time.
Chair, I've muted everybody, so can Ms. Kaka just do her roll call?
Good afternoon, everyone. On the select committee side, we've got Honorable Luthuli, we've got Honorable Baha, Honorable Gillion, Honorable Maleka, Honorable Lehihi, and Honorable Christians. I've got an apology from the chairperson, Honorable Chabeleng. He's off sick. And I've also got an apology from Honorable Ndongeni. She's got an urgent family matter to attend to. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, your mic, Chair.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. DM, can I then hand over to you?
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to members of the Portfolio Committee and the members of the Select Committee and Honorable Tenjegwai. So we want to appreciate this opportunity to come and present our response to COVID-19 as well as the findings, findings of the Auditor General, which I think the actual report will still come, but this one are preliminary findings. I wanted that word. So we are ready with our presentation from Gauteng as well as the Northern Cape, and I believe that as we are improving in our presentation, the Portfolio Committee will be happy, and I'm happy that you have accepted our apologies. DG is in the meeting, but as I indicated earlier on, that he might be cut from time to time, but he will try to reconnect all the time he gets cut. So, Chair, with your permission, if we can, you didn't indicate which province must start first, but I can recommend on our side that we allow Gauteng to start first. And there was an issue last time about time in the Portfolio Committee that we need to give provinces time, because as they present it may take more than an hour, and the other province will be given 60 minutes and the members will not have time to engage with the report. Maybe before Gauteng comes in, Chair, if you can just give us the time allocation per presentation per province, so that we give both provinces equal opportunity to present, which will allow space for members to engage. Thank you.
It's 45 minutes per province, DM.
Thank you so much. 45 minutes per province, which means we have time. Gauteng, HOD, if you are ready, you can start.
Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, thank you so very much for the opportunity. We are ready to start. I'm going to request that my colleague, the Deputy Director General, Mr. Aldi Cheney, who's the DDG for planning, to lead us with this presentation. We will respond to both the status and impact and plans of COVID-19, as well as the response from the Auditor General, DM. We have, and Chairperson, we have this report in two separate presentations. We will load one after the other with your permission. With your permission, can I request Mr. Cheney to take us through? Thanks, DM, Honorable Chairperson.
Yes, yes, please, yes.
Albie K.
Thank you, HOD. I just want to check, is the presentation visible?
Yes, Albie K.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, colleagues from national and provincial departments. I will try to be as brief but very specific to the issues in the presentation. And so I will just start moving on. I think the overall approach that we have taken was to ensure that in the period from the level 5 closure to the post level 5 closure, that we had put into plans that would work across all schools and all classrooms, targeting all learners. And we ended up with having a plan that had some key elements. The first being ensuring school functionality. That basically meant that we needed to get schools resuming classes in the designated grades as we were increasing the number of grades per school, deal with attendance, but then also deal with infrastructure to make sure that all schools were compliant with the requirements to ensure the full implementation of occupational health and safety requirements, as well as issues related to social distancing. And then obviously managing human resources. We knew for a fact that we had a large core of teachers that were older than 60 and teachers that had comorbidities. Then to also deal with the curriculum and the adjustment of the curriculum together with other provincial departments under the guidance of the national department, and then to deal with education support interventions that were compliant with COVID-19. We were expecting a large number of learners coming in each phase. And I think if you just look at the first phase of grade 7 and grade 12, just in public schools, we were expecting almost 300,000 learners and then 1.5 learners that came in on the 31st, and then the 360,000 returning after the in the last phase. I think to report on schooling overall, Chair, I may have to just restart this. It seems to be freezing. All grades with full resumption was on the 31st of August, and I think almost all our schools in public, ordinary, and Elton schools are operating. Some schools are still having positive cases of COVID-19 that requires the school to be cleaned, and basically it would mean partial cleaning. We no longer clean the entire school. And then the same thing would apply to Elsen, and one school among the Elsen schools has been closed due to extreme vandalism. The rest are related to COVID. I think I'll skip this. It's just breaking down the details. In the overall attendance per grade, I think if you just look at overall grade 12, I think we've seen that it's stable. It is being impacted currently by the preparatory exam, so not all learners attend every day. But I think the rest of the attendance, you can clearly see that there are clear signs that rotation is working, and that to a large extent, the rotation to ensure social distancing is in place. The overall attendance over days, and I'll skip this, but just shows that there is consistent attendance. And I think to a large extent, I think we are seeing that the attendance overall is stable. Chair, to just indicate, we will send this. It is just an additional slide that was not in the presentation that was emailed. It was added on late last night. We thought it would be important to show that all grades since the 31st of August, that the attendance has been very consistent across all grades between the 31st and right across to current days. And I think what we are finding that there was a slight dip on the 25th of September, and that was the day after the public holiday. And we see that a lot of learners didn't go to school on that day because of possibly self-created confusion because the calendar was quite clear. I think the measures to improve attendance, we've seen it consistent. I think we've seen high levels of attendance based on the total enrollment. We are enforcing the attendance policy by schools. Schools are required to address non-attendance, to follow up with learners at home, to escalate where learners, especially of compulsory school-going age, is not taking place, to escalate those matters to the district. We are estimating that there's approximately 37,000 learners that are not accounted for, and we're treating them as potential dropouts. We have subsequently issued Circular 11, which reminded schools on how to follow up where there is a dropout in the compulsory school band. But what we've also put into the circular is the fact that even though learners are outside the compulsory school band, the National Development Plan targets to say that we need to reduce dropouts across the schooling system would apply, and therefore it's an inherent goal of the Education Department to ensure that no child leaves schooling until they complete matric. And so we are enforcing this, we're monitoring it. And in addition to this, we have just commissioned a SNAP headcount in schools, trying to identify an account for the learners that may have dropped out, and then to hold the schools accountable together with the districts in respect of following up as to why learners have moved. In our preliminary findings, we have found that some learners have migrated to other provinces and have taken transfers, but we still need to update our records, and hopefully the next submission on SSMs will give us those specific incidences. The COVID management in schools, I think to a large extent, we had over 3,000 positive cases in schools, of which 2,056 were educators, 933 were learners, and under 400 being support staff in schools. This is the trends, and I think if you look at the trends towards the right-hand side of the graph, you will find that the number of incidents have gone down. If you look at the red graph, it's a five-day rolling average, which basically just tries to normalize the peaks. And I think if we continue in this way, I think we will move to the point where the number of incidents in schools are reduced to virtually nothing. I think what is coming through from this is that the measures that we had put into place that is contained both in the regulations and the directives issued by the Minister of Basic Education, when implemented, does contain the spread. We have had no cases of large incidents in schools. The majority of incidents in schools has been around a single teacher or a single learner. Obviously, sometimes through contact, more people have to go under observation, but what we have found that the number of cases have not been high. We had no case of super spreading in schools, and I think that has been a positive sign of the measures that we have put into place. I think the number of fatalities, it has been mainly educators, 32 educators that have basically passed on. And I think what we found is that it is mainly one case at a time. The peak was in the second half of July, which was linked to the national peak as well. And that there were four cases on particular days in that regard. But I think overall, it has been contained, and we're finding that the number of teachers dying or the number of employees dying has reduced substantially. The number of recoveries are going up continuously. These are cases that we've received from schools, and I think what we will pick up is that as the new cases are progressing, that the number of recoveries will increase. The number of comorbidities with learners, I think there has been some issues around policy management at school level. We had 1,468 learners being granted a concession based on parental fear and anxiety, 864 due to ill health, and 539 due to comorbidity. However, what we are picking up is that there were more cases of learners staying at home without having applied for the concession from the department, as was required by provincial guidelines and directives. And this is what we are following up with the SNAP attendance survey, and hopefully we would be in a position to intervene and ensure that we support the learners that remain at home. The school exemption, I think that's what we've done. We have provided the support to learners that were at home. Those schools that were unable to reach learners electronically, we had prepared 14-day learner activity packs, and these were distributed from schools. Parents had to collect them, and parents had to bring back the tasks, assessment tasks and assignments. These were then controlled by the teachers and feedback provided to learners. In terms of comorbidity application, in terms of collective agreement one, the department received a large number of applications in support of this decision to allow teachers with comorbidities to work from home. We earmarked 3,500 educator posts as substitute posts. And I think around the 21st of September, when collective agreement number one came to an end, we had withdrawn those concessions. In total, we had 5,149 CS educators applying for concessions, 829 PS staff in schools. In total, 173 were not granted. And then obviously, we then provided substitutes. And in total, we provided 2,736 educator substitutes in schools where there was a need. In terms of the SOP social distancing and reengineering of schooling, we issued two sets of standard operating procedures, guidelines for all GPG workers, including office-based staff, and then a standard operating procedure for the education sector that was issued by DBE, including all its subsequent amendments. Based on the SOPs, we also provided a large number of operational guidelines and policies, and this is just a list of them. And I think to a large extent, we ensured that schools were complying with these guidelines. We also produced information and guiding manuals for SGBE's teachers, security staff, school management teams, parents, learners, general assistants and administrators in schools. And together with the Matthew School of Governance and Leadership, we provided training together with the Department of Health. The monitoring of social distancing and the use of masks is being taken on by the districts and school officials, and the compliance is being done. In addition, in Gauteng, we appointed over 5,000 youth to support the screening and compliance to the SOPs in schools. These youth were called youth brigades, and these youth brigades were deployed to any school that required them, and basically we ensured that those learners were trained to conduct screening as well as enforcement of social distancing during feeding times and during the day. Schools, we looked at three options on reorganizing of schools, rotation both daily and weekly, and then obviously platooning of shifts. The province decided not to promote platooning due to HR and logistical issues. And I think what we had asked schools to do was to organize the schooling based on a 1.5 meter social distancing arrangement, which is now been relaxed to 1 meter. And we also then had to comply with the 50%. We recommended that most schools divide the class into two cohorts. Some schools requested that they organize this course into boys only and girls only options, and this was allowed by the province. And I think the majority of schools opted for the alternate day. In secondary schools, grade 12 learners had to attend daily, and it wasn't a grade that was allowed to rotate. So in total, 1,116 schools opted for the alternative days. 309 alternative weeks. There were a large number of schools. It's not in this slide, but there were a number of schools that didn't have high numbers and were allowed to deviate and allow all learners back because they could enforce social distancing without having to introduce rotation. And there were no provincial deviations that were requested from the minister as allowed in the directive. This is just an extract from the guidelines that we had given schools, where we visually provided the description on how to organize the school, the spacing, as well as the classrooms. We don't operate hostels in private schools. They're operated by SGBs, but they were given the same guidelines. But in respect of the 31 operational hostels in Gauteng special schools, the reduction of 1.5 meter social distancing to 1 meter alleviated the problems around the number of learners that could be accommodated. And I think what we did find is that the number of learners that were allowed into hospitals that increased at least as a result of this. We also increased the intake of people in hostels, mainly as a result of converting recreational rooms such as TV rooms as interim dormitories. And in this way, we ensured that more learners could be accommodated and to reduce the need for transportation. And then obviously the learners that were closest to the school were transported on a daily basis. We did make sure that additional sanitation facilities were introduced in the school, as well as an additional water tank in one school. On PPE deliveries, I think we delivered the PPEs to all schools. We had used a just-in-time approach, mainly to prevent break-ins and robberies at schools. And we had ensured that all PPEs were in school before learners returned. In Gauteng, all PPEs were procured by the Gauteng Department of Health. And where there were quality issues with the mask, these were replaced rapidly. There were incidents where the masks were not compliant, but we had intervened in that and we had given them replacements. I think moving forward, we already in the process to procure all the top-up PPEs that are required and PPEs that may be needed as of January without using the Department of Health. We've been allowed to procure directly, and in this way, we would be in a position to ensure compliance with procurement policy and National Treasury Instruction 5. I think what we are doing overall, just to give you an idea, these were the quantities that we had issued to comply with all learners and all schools meeting the requirements for social distancing and the resumption of learning. And this was the monthly quantities that we have on stock in order to ensure that schools get replenishment as and when is necessary. Infrastructure, I think we've made sure that all schools were compliant. In the week leading up to grade 12 and grade 7 returning, 48 schools had to receive emergency repairs in order to be ready to receive schools. However, four schools were so badly damaged due to vandalism that they could not open on time. They had subsequently opened. We had to deliver 103 mobile classrooms to schools where there were space challenges, mainly as a result of classrooms being damaged. And then we also found that when we opened, there were still some schools that did not reopen, even though the infrastructure met the requirements. And this was mainly due to community resistance about using companies from outside the area. And then there were also some issues related to contractor delivery, mainly due to operating under the lockdown. They were unable to get the necessary materials fast enough. And then we also had an experience where SGBs were demanding more work in schools other than what was required on an emergency basis and refused learners to return to school or be accommodated elsewhere. And we then had to get interventions to ensure that the SGBs did release the learners to attend school. There were 67 schools in Gauteng, or there are 67 schools in Gauteng that do not have bulk services. And as a result of that, we have been providing potable water to those schools with the necessary tanks on an ongoing basis. There's a three-year contract to supply water to the 67 schools. What is, and I'll pick it up on a bit later, that there is an issue that due to Rand Water penalizing the municipalities for poor payment, they reduced the water pressure. And there's a large number of township areas in Gauteng where the water pressure is lost during the day, resulting in poor water supply to schools. Affecting sanitation and drinking water. And we've had to deal with that with the municipalities. Electricity, load shedding and load reduction is a continuous threat to the normal operation of a school. We've had head office and district offices being disinfected weekly. All schools were disinfected before the resumption of learning. Schools with sound financial management received the transfer payment to employ a company directly to clean the school. 371 schools with poor management were cleaned by donors as part of a provincial donation. Schools with COVID positive 19 cases were disinfected on a case-by-case basis, and we were allowed to deviate from normal procurement processes to appoint local companies to do that cleaning on a rapid basis. 355 schools have been affected by vandalism since the inception of the regulations. 26 cases, sorry, just get some water. Uh, 26 cases have been reported since the resumption of schooling on the 24th. 131 of the 355 schools have been affected by more than one incident. That is 37% of schools. There's one school, that has had vandalism and break-ins to the tune of about 8 incidents since the lockdown started. I think important to note is that none of the 355 schools were closed as a result of vandalism, though portions of the school had to be rehabilitated, and this was done by service providers as classes were ongoing. 89% of the schools have now been completed. It's the larger schools with larger levels of vandalism that is still being completed. And since the initial rollout of 103 mobiles, a further 202 mobile classrooms delivered to deal with space challenges. This is just a breakdown of the schools with affected by vandalism by district. I think what we have put into place is employed patrollers around the school together with the community policing forum. And all NOFI schools have been linked to the police station and schools where there is high-end ICT equipment. We've arranged for private security guards to provide security at those schools. Subsequently, we have seen a decline in the level of vandalism, and it's virtually zero as we speak. This is just an example of the notices that we receive on an ongoing basis where there is load reduction. And these are mainly in township areas across Gauteng. I think it is also now in other areas of the country, but mainly in Gauteng's densely populated township areas, we have supply. The thing is that at least the electricity does come back.
These issues, the big one being the national digital infrastructure and ecosystem. And I do promise that I will engage Yusuf meetings. Call Yusuf to be part of those engagements, because that's one really very big issue that we need to engage.
Is Dr. Tomekwayo here? Dr. Tomekwayo's mic is on.
Say, I've muted everybody. If Mr. Cheney can continue.
Can you allow Gauteng to go? Yeah.
Thank you. Jack, can you hear me?
Yes, you can proceed, sir.
Thank you. On school nutrition, we are currently providing, we had provided learners that were at home during the lockdown. This was expanded after the Gauteng High Court decision. In total, we are currently feeding 1.5 million learners. Now, comorbidity are receiving food packs. 37,000 learners are not been fed in schools. This is compared to the figures before the lockdown when we were in total feeding 1,546,000. Scholar transport, we are running a scholar transport program in the department using contracted buses. They are all compliant. We've worked with the Department of Transport in the province to ensure that they were compliant with social distancing. Currently, all the buses are now on 100% capacity loading, and we've had no incidents. Psychosocial support is ongoing, and it is to a large extent being provided on individual and on group basis. And I think over the last few weeks, the total number of educators and staff that receive group counseling is close to 4,000. Supporting quality learning, I think the big approach we had taken together with schools was the recovery of teaching time, to put into place curriculum interventions to compensate for the time lost, and to accelerate. I think the big issue that we are monitoring and we are asking schools to do very carefully is to ensure that we not only deal with covering the topics, but that the topics are being dealt with in terms of the depth of coverage. That means the complexity of the content needs to also be covered and not simply just saying the work has been done at an introductory level and moving on. We've reviewed the assessment tasks and examination requirements, and this has been communicated to schools, and I think we are dealing with those particular aspects. I think in terms of remote learning, these were support to learners at home. We had issued two circulars very early in the period after grade 12 and grade 7 came in, or just around, just before they came in. The one was guidelines for home education and what we called in Gauteng lockdown learning. These were learners that, for reasons other than comorbidities, opted not to come back to school. We had assumed that we would continue supporting those learners at home, while the grades that were not coming in would be supported through remote learning activities. I think to a large extent, most schools with the capacity to do online teaching using Microsoft Teams and Zoom were doing it, and then schools that didn't have that capacity were providing paper-based support material in the form of worksheets and so on a 14-day process. And then we made available to all learners access to online materials that were available on zero-rated websites, as well as portals that were organized by DBE and the Gauteng Department of Education. And I think to a large extent, this is still ongoing for learners that are learning from home due to comorbidities and have not decided to come back. The support is that learners collected the materials, learners undertook the tasks at home with parental support, and then obviously teachers had to review the work done, provide feedback, and issue the new materials for the next module of work that needed to be done. Lockdown learning plans for Elton schools were based on a similar approach. They were a bit more intensive, and I think we made sure that those learners in the Elton sector were adequately provided. The online learning I spoke to has been done, and I think the only other point we would like to make in this regard is that we extensively use community-based radio and TV stations to provide GDE lessons using our officials from districts and subject advisors in line with the curriculum pacing material to ensure that there was coverage taking place during the lockdown period. This is just a sample of the materials that was issued, TV stations that we had used in that particular regard. I think the implementation of the reorganized and trim curriculum, I think we were very clear in ensuring that all teachers and school managers were adept with this, and we made sure that they were fully trained to comply with the requirements of the curriculum and to ensure that curriculum has been delivered in detail. I think the grade R to grade 11 trimmed ATPs were also the annual teaching plans were delivered, and I think we had provided the necessary guidelines. The resumption of teaching basically started a little slowly and then accelerated. A large number of schools still provide Zoom and PowerPoint presentations to learners that are on the off day at schools based on the rotation. And so there is a multimodal approach to dealing with learners during the period of rotation. In addition to the normal classroom teaching, we've offered a range of interventions and support materials for learners in the foundation phase. These are supplementary to what is happening in classrooms, including Google Classroom videos and worksheets that have been developed by schools and districts. And these are being distributed on an ongoing basis. Very similarly, with the intermediate phase, we also provided additional graded leaders, workbooks for home learning, which is a pilot program in one of our districts, and then obviously we're expanding those, and the use of materials like the Siavula Math and Science practice program, and then obviously the use of local radio stations as an ongoing basis. Very similarly to the senior phase, in the FET phase, mainly grade 10 to 12, we focus more on ensuring the completion of the curriculum as planned without losing the depth of coverage. And I think what we have done is provided additional materials for teachers to use in the classroom, including PowerPoint presentations to ensure that the coverage was optimal. What we also provided is the secondary school intervention program, which is a supplementary program. We've taken all the older material that we had developed in the previous years and also circulated it to schools. Grade 12 learners were being supported, and I think this was a bit more intensive. Even the district oversight in this regard is a bit more intensive. We are providing additional support to learners who progress to grade 12 and learners that are at risk, and to ensure that this is happening, we are running afternoon classes as well as weekend classes and camps. And I think to some extent, we are ensuring that schools make sure that these learners meet the minimum requirements that will allow them to succeed in the exam. The SIP intervention, which is the secondary school intervention program in Gauteng, will have residential camps from the end of October to the 1st of November. And then this is basically focusing on learners that have got sort of special needs, as well as learners that are high risk in that they would have progressed from grade 11 and would need additional support. We're targeting 10,000 learners, and hopefully we would get most of these learners from your underperforming schools. And then obviously we are busy with the last push that will ensure that we get learners to be ready for the exam early in November. The measures continue, and I won't go into too much detail, but I think all the things that we are doing is in support of the national effort to ensure that there is sufficient support to learners in grade 12 that is being done by DBE and supported by a range of partners. The 2020 NSC exam, we are essentially ensuring that the learners are covered. In total, it will be just over 200,000 learners that will write the exam. And we've appointed 12,000 markers and 30 marking centers will be used to ensure that we comply with health and safety as well as physical distancing. District support has been ongoing, and I think to a large extent I've spoken it throughout the presentation. It is intensive, school-based, and interventionists in ensuring that schools comply with the requirements. Obviously, grade 12 is a particular focus of the work of districts at this point, and it is ongoing. Special schools, we have a large number of special schools in different categories, and I think to a large extent, we have dealt with it in a similar way. All learners that come back, except a few that have comorbidities, and those have been supported while being at home. And I think this is just an example of how materials were packed during the lockdown periods for learners at home in special schools, together with the weekly planning guidelines that then went to both parents and schools in this regard. We had special operating guidelines for Elsen schools, and then obviously with the profound intellectual disability learners, We have 61 special care centers and 11 special schools, and the support that we provided was ongoing right through the lockdown period and post the lockdown period in this particular regard. So I'll focus on the last issues, which is the first report on the COVID as was requested. Chair, this may not have been sent to the committee. We will send it at the end of this presentation. Just to indicate maybe at the start that Gauteng was not part of the initial sample of the first report, but this is the first report that the department has received that we are presenting to the committee. The PPEs in Gauteng were procured centrally by the Department of Health. This was mainly because these were specialty products and they had the expertise to quality control and procure the right materials. The specification of the PPEs were determined nationally and prescribed by National Treasury and DTI. The departments only specified quantities and items as agreed to by the education sector nationally. And the department used the 10-day headcount as the basis for demand planning, and schools were asked to confirm the headcount. The department received the PPEs from the warehouses of the Department of Health and used the service provider to package the PPEs for each school and deliver them and to receive a delivery note signed by the school. After theft during the initial rollout of PPEs, we opted for a just-in-time delivery to counter break-ins. That is, we delivered a few days before the resumption of learning. So the PPEs were not sitting in school for a long time for people to break in and steal, but they would be delivered just in time to be issued.
Well, let's see 5 minutes.
Sorry?
You're left with 5 minutes.
Sure. While we have received some findings, the audit is ongoing and we are still engaging with the auditors. And what we're presenting is a response to the initial findings of the auditors that we have been receiving in the last few weeks. On the PPEs, the department procured about 276 million worth of PPEs through the Department of Health. There are some procurement irregularities identified in the Department of Health. I think what we did find, or the auditors found in terms of their findings, was that we did not focus on the issue of quality and compliance with the specification, even though we were a beneficiary department. The following was identified as concerns. Some masks were not in accordance with the PPE guidelines. Some schools received scanners that were not operational with a limited lifespan. We did not cater for all learners in some cases or age of learners. At some schools, the quality of the face shields were not durable and the supply stands for sanitation bottles were insufficient. And then obviously there were some discrepancies and some committees in schools were not working. These were the only findings that they had on PPEs directly. And I think what we are, and our response to that is that the processes related to the verification of quality was undertaken concurrently with the delivery processes, but not prior to delivery. We had to ensure that masks were in school because the delivery at the Department of Health and the school reopening was very close to each other. And so we had to undertake it at the same time. On the discovery of the masks and shields that were not in accordance, we did replace the masks immediately with masks that were of the right specification, and replacement shields were sourced and sent to schools. We did do a written report on all PPEs that were not compliant together with samples, and these were handed over to the Department of Health, asking them to intervene and remediate. The discrepancies in the headcounts was mainly to the fact that some schools continued enrolling after the 10-day, and that they did not confirm the right quantities at the time of procurement. Schools have been alerted that in future, that they must sign the receipt of the delivery note after they've checked the quantity, so that there are no discrepancies in the quantity that's been delivered based on need, and this had subsequently improved the delivery in subsequent phases. And the department will be procuring PPEs directly as indicated earlier, and this will ensure compliance. There were four other sort of high-level findings around other aspects of the COVID response. The allocation of youth brigades, they had indicated there was an inconsistent allocation. Brigades were not paid on time. The provision of water was not received in one school, and delivery notes in another school didn't have quantities on them. Deep cleanings in the funds that were transferred to school, some schools did not use the cheapest quote to do the cleaning, and there was no evidence that districts provided oversight of valid and accredited service providers at a cost-effective rate. And that obviously the ICT plans in response of COVID-19 was not finalized at the time of the audit. In response to the findings on the youth brigades, I think we will put this in writing, because even though it was communicated in the guidelines to schools, schools had a choice to opt out if they did not want any youth brigades, or just top up the current capacity they had in schools, or request a full court to support COVID-19 processes. I think in future we will adjust the operational policy to make that as an explicit provision, because we did not treat this as a one-size-fits-all in all schools. On the provision of water, I think I've explained the 67 schools earlier, and I've explained that there are water pressure problems. In the school that is referred to in the finding, that school has got bulk water supply, but due to municipal water pressure problems, do not have water on an ongoing basis, and they receive potable water from the municipality, not from the department. We have subsequently intervened in that school, and we've also asked the municipality to intervene in terms of the water supply that it was providing. We have had meetings with the municipalities in this regard across all of the areas relating to the issue of poor water pressure in urban areas. On the deep cleaning, while we note the auditor's findings, it was a transfer payment to school, and as a transfer payment to a school, the PFMA protects us from interfering in the procurement processes of the entity that receives the transfer payment. We did, however, issue proper guidelines and specifications for the procurement of the cleaning services, and clearly the SGB and the principal had to ensure compliance with that. We did ask schools to give us the copies of the proof of procurement, and unfortunately, after the fact, we would have to interact with schools that did not comply and to put into place the necessary disciplinary processes that is required. We did, however, ensure during that entire period that all schools were monitored for cleaning in order to ensure that they were ready to receive learners. In response to the ICT, it is correct that the department's ICT response was not approved at the time of COVID-19. The funding was only made available during the special adjustment process, and plans had to be adjusted to the available funding, and this was concluded subsequently. We have finalized the plans to support remote and online learning. Our initial ICT project was about supporting learning in school and not for distribution via online services. This has subsequently been readjusted, and we are in the process of reorienting the program towards that. Chair, that is the presentation on the two items as requested. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Gauteng. Can I then hand over to Northern Cape? He's led by the MEC.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. DM, Honorable DM, let me appreciate on behalf of the Northern Cape the opportunity to make a presentation on the status and the impact of COVID on the schools, and also reflect on the outcomes of the Auditor General and then the last push towards the Matric Intervention Program. I am accompanied by the head of department, the acting head of department, Mr. Sandile Beuzana, and the whole SMT. In the interest of time, I won't introduce the whole SMT. The presentation will be done by the acting HOD, Mr. Sandile Beuzana. With your permission, Chair, can I give over to the acting HOD to continue with the presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable MEC, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable DM, and the Honorable Members. Can I just confirm that?
Who is on the picture, Mr. Beuzana?
The picture is my daughter.
Oh, I thought now the acting HOD is the primary school child. Thank you. Can continue.
thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks for that. Is the presentation visible, Honorable Chair?
Yes, you can proceed.
Okay, thanks. The format of the presentation is as was requested by the honorable members, and then we start our presentation by actually looking at what transpired during the lockdown level 5, and as you know that there were the regulations, and then in terms of the situation in the, of level 5, there were no schools that were open, and the impact thereof was that there was vandalism at school, there was lack of quality teaching and learning in schools, and then especially our 1-3 contact schools. And then the qualifying NSPs were not fed on a daily their daily meal. Then the transport service providers were not able to deliver the service also. Okay, I'm just experiencing some problem with the sharing of the screen. Can I just request my colleague in Kimberley to share the screen from that side? Okay, then we have alert level 4. In alert level 4 is that it was the same situation as we had with alert level 5. And then came alert level 3. And then with alert level 3 is that the education the directions were issued, and then we have also the labor directions that were given. And in terms of schools were allowed to reopen in a phased approach as determined by the national minister. And then the DBE issued standard operating procedures for teachers, non-teaching staff, learners, and COVID-19. DBE issued guidelines on hygiene for schools. And then we had alert level 2, and then with alert level 2, schools were allowed to reopen in a phased approach as determined by the National Minister of DBE. DBE issued the SOPs and then also the guidelines. And then when we came to alert level 1, is that all grades were able to actually return to school, although that we had an arrangement of that there was going to be a rotational basis in terms of the schools, and I will report to that later on. All employees were also expected to resume duty. In terms of curriculum coverage, is that when you look at it, is that from grade R up to 12, grade R it was 60%, and then at grade 12, we had 91% attendance, which is good for us in terms of grade 12, but for the rest of the others, that we had problems in terms of the attendance of the learners. And then with regard to curriculum support at the district level, that these are the steps that we have actually taken. The following support activities unfolded at district level with guidance from the province. We had the lead teachers, we have the itinerant teachers, we had the virtual meetings, we had apps that we had on our website and also apps that we've developed on our own. We had the printed material, and then we also had the on-site support that that was given. And then in terms of the dropout of learners that have dropped out, is that is the numbers that are there in terms of the learners that we have dropped out in terms of the different grades. And these are the learners who have never actually returned to school. With regard to grade 12, we have 580 of them that didn't actually return. Now, what is it that we have done as a department when we realized that we were able to actually talk to the school principals to engage with the parents whose children were not at school, and then also that the schools were able to communicate with the parents directly, wherein the parents were actually encouraged to allow the children to come back. Now, initially when we started, is that the numbers were less, but after those interactions, that is the response that we got, but still, the numbers were not actually going down in terms of what we are actually expecting. And then we also had our QLTC structure that also tried to assist in terms of talking to the communities. Now, here we have the planned activities with regard to the grade 12 examination that is actually coming. And this is what we have done and we are still continuing doing in terms of our grade 12. We had the Saturday classes. We had the lock-in sessions. We have center-based residential spring schools that will be starting as from today. And then we also have the school-based work-in spring schools, which will start on Monday. We have subject advisors working sessions. We also had the psychosocial support that was given to both the learners and the parents and the teachers. State of readiness in terms of our national senior examination. Now, because of COVID, is that we had to redo all the things, and as a department, is that we had to sit down and look at our strategies, and we had new ideas that actually came in. And then as the province, we consulted with the districts, and where we picked up on any problems in with regard to the districts, we were able to address those challenges that actually came out. Now, this is our statement of intent, and we are sure that we can stick to this statement. Is that as a department, we are confident that the provincial and the district examination system are ready to administer the examination. As a provincial education department, we took all the precautionary steps or measures and applied all protocols to ensure an incident-free and successful administration and management of the 2020 NSC-SC examination. Now, in terms of the numbers that we are dealing with, is that when we look at the full-time NSC candidates, we have 12,049. For part-time NSC candidates, it's 1,689. The June SC candidates, we have 5,534. And then we have the June NSC candidates full-time, excluding the MEO, is 2,382. And then the June NSC candidates, which is part-time, is 128. And then the 2020 MEO candidates is 2,146, which gives us a grand total of 23,924 candidates will be sitting. Now, in terms of the centers, these are the centers. For the full-time candidates, we have 138 centers. For the part-time, we have 128 centers. For the independent schools, we have 6 centers. And then a total 2020 June SCA centers is 113. And a total NSC centers, full-time plus independent plus part-time, is 144. Combined NSC, SC duplicate centers removed, we have 152. District established community centers for part-time candidates is 25. The total number of centers where the combined NSC and the SC exam will be written will be 177. The important dates that we should diarize is that we have a pledge signing ceremony which is scheduled for the 2nd of November 2020. And our theme is the Northern Cape is ready. Let's all support the class of 2020. This provincial event will take place in Ratang Thuto High School in Bushmansburg. The release of results by the minister will be on the 22nd February 2021. And then the release by the Provincial Education Department will be the 23rd of February 2021. And then we'll also be having our matric awards on that same day. Now, the provision of for learners with profound intellectual disabilities, Now, the issue that we have to note, in the Northern Cape, there's only 9 special centers and the 4 times 5 selected specials schools, learners with profound intellectual disabilities enrolled. And the special care centers accommodate 229 learners and 43 caregivers. Now, also that the situation that we are facing with these centers is that they fall under DSD. And as things stand now, the DSD has not actually allowed for them to be reopened. So as we speak, is that those centers are still remaining closed. But also that from the side of the department, we have not actually stopped to actually prepare ourselves to welcome when the learners are coming, to welcome them, but at the same time also to support them whilst they are actually at home. What we have also done is that we also got a special approval from the DBE, where we deviated from our initially approved business plan so that we are able to accommodate the learners in terms of the COVID-19 experience that we're actually having. And then, Chair, in terms of social distancing in classrooms, we have the standard operating procedures that have directed schools that we keep this 1 meter distance among the learners. And then also we have actually required that the SMT and the SGB must play a particular role in ensuring that it's actually happening. But also that when it's not able to happen, that we have actually asked that schools must do the necessary adjustment in terms of their own timetable, where we actually are using the differentiated timetable models, and that allows either the children to come bi-weekly or on a rotational basis. So, and also that we have the alternate days, or we have the platooning that is actually happening. Now, with the 1 meter that has been agreed upon, is that before the 1 meter, we had the ratio of 1:20, but now with the 1 meter is that we have a ratio of 1:30. We have also discouraged the schools to rent out their halls for church services or any funerals so that we know that the schools are remaining safe. Now, we also have this arrangement that whenever there is a situation in the school in terms of the isolation room, that we should not have more than one learner in that particular place. Social distance in terms of the hostels. Now, with regard to the hostels, that we are actually facing some problems that the hostels do not have enough space to actually keep even the 1 meter. But where the 1 meter is possible is that we have actually made those arrangements where we ensure that even when the learners are actually studying or they are dining, is that we respect the 1 meter that is supposed to be there. But in cases where we are not able to have the 1 meter social distancing protocol in place, there we are actually providing learner transport that is able to take care of the issue of the distance. And I think it's working for us for the time being. But also that what we have done is that we have also procured additional staff for schools, where especially the hostels where we bought tables, and then they have also worked on the issue of making sure that they put in markers where children know exactly that how they need to stand when they are actually lining up for food. But also is that we have the daily or the bi-weekly rotation and platooning timetable models to ease the pressure in the hostels. And I think that is also assisting us in accommodating the learners who are supposed to be accommodated. And the eating time and all that has also been taken care of. And I think that it's actually working. And then we will continue doing that as and when we are actually moving as a department. With regard to school infrastructure, is that yes, we have actually lost a lot of time in terms of teaching because of the regulations that are in place. And then we were fortunate as a province with the coming in of the 3 models, that is the platooning, alternate days, and the biweekly rotation attendance. It was able to actually take care of the pressure that we are going to experience with regard to social distancing and also the shortage of classes. Now, because of that, is that there was no need for us as a department to procure any additional mobile classrooms, because with those models in place, we were able to actually respect even the social distance that was actually required from us. Now, with regard to the options in terms of the different alternates that we have, is that there we see that we have the status quo remaining. Now, the schools that decided to have to remain with the status quo is those schools that were able to observe the 1.5 meter band, but now it's a 1 meter distance between the learners. So we have 64 of those schools did not actually change, they remained as they were. And then we have the issue of the platooning. So we have 18 schools in the province. And then the alternate days per week, we have 292 schools that opted for that. And then the bi-weekly rotational attendance, we have 26 schools that have gone for that. And then we have the hybrid model, means that it's a mixture of all these, it's 155 schools. And the total number of schools in the province, it's 555. Vandalism. When we reopened, is that we had a situation where we had 107 of our schools that were vandalized, and that we had to actually go for the emergency procuring of services. And as we speak now, 89 of them are completed, and then 18 is outstanding. But also this 18 that is outstanding has not affected the schooling. It means that school is still continuing, and we are experiencing no problems at this stage in terms of accommodation for learners in the school. Now, measures to deal with the vandalism is that we have a protocol in the province that we have actually established, where we have linked a school to a COP, that is the Adopt a COP, and then every school has actually done that. We have also spoken to the Department of Transport, Safety and Liaison to actually play this oversight in terms of when we have these schools that are always been targeted, that they must be able just to patrol, and we hope that with that it's able to actually deter vandalism and break-ins in our various schools. We also have the QLTC Communication Advocacy Program, where we are actually enticing the communities that the communities must take ownership, and then they must judge guard jealously over their schools. And then also that there is a 1.5 that we were promised from the side of the MEC for Finance, where we must be installing alarms. So we are still following up on that one to actually get the funds, where we know that the schools that are always being vandalized, if we can actually put up the alarm system that can actually assist us. But also that as a department, we have to look at the carry through. Because remember that when you talk of an alarm, it's not just to put up an alarm. We also have the monthly service fees that needs to be paid. So we need to look at that, because as a department, we have not actually made room for that or budgeted for that. And then any school that has been affected by damage, so we don't have those kind of schools in our province. Now, this is a report from the SAPS from the 27th of March up until the 19th of October, which is the latest report with regard to the burglaries, the theft, the malicious damages, and the arrest. So as you can see there, that those are the cases, the burglaries, 268, the thefts, 55, malicious damage to property is 24. Now the numbers of arrests, these are the numbers of people who have been arrested. Total in the province, it's 66. And as you can see, it's there per district. Water and sanitation. In terms of water and sanitation, we had two schools that were actually affected. But the first school, Bareki, is that we're able to have tankers being given there. So it means that the school is operating 100%. And then we had the second school, which had a problem. And at this point is that we are only 90% completed. But also is that the learners were not affected negatively in terms of teaching. Because what we did is that we were able to accommodate those learners in other schools where they were able to actually attend their classes. So in terms of learners, nothing has actually happened in terms of the teaching time. They have been at school on a daily basis. Screening and testing. Our department has appointed a total of 2,134 screeners at schools, district office, and the provincial office. The screeners were appointed for a period of, appointed for a period of 6 months with a stipend of 2,500. Now, their term of office or their contracts are ending end of November. So we have a challenge of how we are going to actually approach December, because all the exams are going to end on the 15th of November. So it means that we will have to actually try and get funds somewhere, although that from our provincial treasury is that it's clear that they will not be able to assist us. Screeners are tasked with the responsibility of monitoring social distancing and the wearing of masks by both learners and officials. So the department has also established a formal agreement with the Department of Health for testing and contact tracing. And then the schools were also linked to the nearest clinic so that we ensure that we get faster service. All screeners were trained with the assistance of the Department of Health And then also the contact tracing remains a responsibility of the Department of Health. However, is that this is not actually being responded in the way that we wanted it to be responded to. Learner Transport, at this stage, is that Learner Transport is back, and the learners are, the capacity of learners is 100%, and then also that it's mandatory for all the learners in Learner Transport to wear their masks. And then the department has also issued all the officials and learners with the mask. And then all the drivers and the transport vehicles also be issued with hand sanitizer, face masks by the department. And then the department is also monitored regularly compliance with the COVID-19 regulations, in some instances supported by the traffic department. It means that it can be an offense for a bus driver or a taxi driver who's transporting our learners without a mask. In terms of the nutrition program, the NSNP, is that we did not fit so much in the first quarter. Although is that as a department, we tried to feed by using DSD, where we have actually also supported in terms of the food parcels. And then we could not actually have formal meetings, but rather had our meetings through virtual means. But also is that the whole thing about deaths of officials was also a serious problem in terms of anxiety and stress. And then the opening and closure of schools was also not assisting us. And during the lockdown and after schools were vandalized and cooking and eating utensils were stolen, including the NSMP groceries. This was a setback, as all the things that were stolen had to be replaced. Now, in terms of what we have done or what is currently happening in the department, this is a situation staggering, feeding of grades that we have zero. And then learners in grades not at school collecting foods, cooked meal, we have zero. Learners not at school collecting pre-packed food parcels, it's 162. Learners not at school to collect pre-cooked food parcels is zero. And then we have other combinations of option 2 and 3. It gives us the 223 schools. And then also that during lockdown is that we were able to communicate with stakeholders about crucial issues that were actually coming up. We also had issued a circular on the 8th of 2020, and then we sent out flyers to schools where we are able to explain the situation with regard to the feeding of our learners. And then also we had announcements that were done on the local radio stations. And then we also use a social platform as a form of communicating. With regard to the to COVID infections among the community of education in the province. Now there you see that number of schools that were affected is 214. Number of schools still closed is only one. Number of educators, it was 320. Number of learners is 289. And then number of PSA staff is 36. Number of screeners is 19. Number of food handlers is 12. The total number comes to 676. And then fatalities, we lost 13, and all these are educators. And then the recoveries is 533. The procurement of COVID PPEs, that these are the items that we procured for the schools, and we were able to actually give to the schools in varying quantities depending on the size of the school. So that is the list that was actually given to the schools. And then also what we have also done is that we have also started the process of procuring, and we think that by the time when the schools are reopening on the 2nd of November, we will be able to support the schools. But this is the procurement that we have done. As you can see there, that we have the item description, we have the payment quantities, we have the unit measures, and then we have the amount. So we have placed a total order of 29.7 million for the schools. It means that whatever we are giving to the schools, they have to keep it up until the end of January. As you know, that the schools will only open on the 23rd of January. So we hope that by that time, they'll be able to cover. But then we'll have to do a second procurement based on what we see in terms of COVID for next year. So this is just a breakdown that I've given. It's a breakdown now per district and also for the district offices, that these are the areas in which we will be actually giving to the various schools. Now, the expenditure is at the 30th of September 2020, is that we have used 139.7 million in terms of the reprioritized budget. So this reprioritized budget is that we have to take from our infrastructure budget to be able to buy the all the issues that we needed in terms of COVID-19. Now, 41 million has been spent on stipends for COVID-19 screeners and cleaners. That is a number I've given earlier. And then included in the 98 million, it is the cost of PPE, which was 29.9. And then we also have 44 million, which was used for the disinfecting. Now, in the 98 million, what we also did as a province is that we transferred an initial amount to schools, where schools will be able to actually, whilst deliveries may not have happened at a particular stage, we're able to actually procure cleaning material. So that is also included in that 98 million, and also the training that we did as a department. Now, this is the audit findings in terms of the first report from the auditors. And then in our province, with regard to the first report, that there were three issues that were raised by the auditors. And then these areas were subsequently also attended to by us. And then we raised it and dealt with the auditors. And there was no issue subsequently. Now, in just to give context, is that on the local content not considered for procurement of the three-ply fabric face masks. Now, this is our response to the auditors. We did not agree with their audit finding because we felt that we had actually done the procurement before we were given the note that was issued on the 20th of May, and then orders were placed already by that time. So by the time when they spoke to us, that the orders had already gone through. So there was no room for us to say that they will be calling back those orders and then do a new order. But from the side of the auditors, that this matter was resolved, and we are waiting for the final report, and we are hoping that this one would not be appearing as part and parcel of the final report. With regard to the price ceiling exceeding the procurement of disposable gloves, so also on here, this one is that we also did not agree with the auditors, and as you can see, that this matter was actually resolved. And what has also happened here is that the Treasury released a new communication instruction 5, which allows for that variance. And with that variance, it means that it is within the hands of the accounting officer to be able to actually deal with that variance. So with regard to that one is that the outcome is that between us and the AGSA, that this matter is resolved. And then deficiencies identified in the stock management practice at schools. So we also did not agree with the AG on this one. And as you can see, that they have accepted our response, and then this matter was actually resolved. But also that we are saying that there is a need for us to ensure that the schools might be able to take care of the stock that they are given, have a record that is in place where it indicates exactly what is it that they are receiving, what is it they are using, and what is left, so that we are also able to assess schools in the event that the school may be using their, may be losing their stock faster than the others. So in that way that we are able to actually assess the school. So, but as far as this is concerned, we're saying that it is work in progress. We think that we can deal with it. But as things stand now, from head office and district offices, we have put up some measures, internal control measures in place, where we are actually checking on our stock registers. And we are hopeful that we will be able to extend this further to the schools. But the schools are supposed to actually be keeping those stock registers, but we just have to follow up and ensure that that is actually being done. So, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, is that these are the three areas. As I say, that this is the first report of the AG. So we are waiting for the final report from the AG. We are not sure about any other issues, but these ones that have been raised have been taken care of. And also, Chair, that as the DM has reported that the DG is somewhere in the Northern Cape. I'm also not in our office. I'm also in Upington. And then I was worried about the connectivity, but at least I've finished with the presentation. And the colleagues are sitting in Kimberley. So together we will be dealing with all the questions that are going to come. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you, Chair. That's our presentation. Over to the members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. And the two provinces that have presented. Members, those are that's the presentation from Gauteng and Northern Cape. Can I note hands? I've noted Honorable Masezi. I've noted Honorable Christians. Those are the only.
Thank you. Am I the only person, chairperson?
No, you are not there. It's Masezi first, then yourself.
Okay, thank you.
You can proceed.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you to both provinces for, you know, their presentation. I just want to ask with regarding to, you know, learners that haven't been coming back to school, like the potential, potential dropouts. If you look at the figures, you can see that, like, the number is quite concerning. Like, I think about 70% of learners have come back, especially for grade 12. But I'm not only looking at grade 12, I'm looking at other grades, because this cohort is going to be affected as we go on, because I believe that once learners, you know, start staying at home, they sort of like, you know, gradually will sort of like, you know, drop out. And this is going to be quite a big issue, not only this year, but, you know, going forward because of the impact of COVID-19. I just want to find out if there's anything, especially in both provinces, that they are doing to make sure. I know that you talk about policy, but I think, like, you know, we cannot just look at this as something that, you know, okay, fine, let's talk to the parents. But, like, I think we need to take more serious steps to ensure that learners are going back, because as it is, normally we'll have, you know, a big chunk of learners that, you know, drop out under normal circumstances. And I'm kind of a bit worried now that, like, you know, this is going to be more devastating than we think, because, like, you know, because of, you know, of what I'm talking about, the COVID-19. I think we need to look at, you know, maybe DM, I should maybe like, you know, refer this to you, like, you know, what is it that we're going to do to make sure that, like, you know, we really have the learners coming back, and maybe even have, you know, like, for instance, in grade 12, you have all the contacts of learners because of the fact that they are writing bands. So we need to, you know, find ways of ensuring that these learners do come back to school. And I don't know what other steps will the departments throughout the country will be taking to ensure that, like, you know, there's an extra effort that is taken. Pertaining Gauteng especially, I know that, like, there was a time that the MEC was saying that learners could be on virtual. They were basically, some of them have decided that, you know, they are not going to attend. They are going to, you know, kind of like finish the syllabus themselves and all that. But, like, because of the assessment that they need to do at school, what is one of the reasons why there's the emphasis of that. Do you know how many learners are basically on a virtual, which maybe might not have even dropped out, but, like, you know, they are using virtual systems to finish the syllabus in grade 12. So I don't know if you have, you know, those figures. And also it has been an interest in you know, parents saying that I want to do homeschooling. I don't want my child to go back to school for the next few years, or it could actually be even, you know, for their duration, their school year's duration. So what is it like, how has it been with the both provinces in terms of applications? Have you received a lot of applications? And what I've also noticed is that, like, their parents were saying that no, they haven't received any response. They've applied. I don't know what is your turnaround time, but there's one parent, for instance, in Gauteng, that has applied for homeschooling for their child, and the department hasn't come back, and it's been 6 months now. So I just want to find out, like, you know, what is the backlog? What's the cause of the backlog? And is there any strategy that you have to make sure that they are, at least you have about 30 days turnaround strategy for you to be able to access these applications? If you can maybe respond on that. And then the other issue is, you know, given the fact that, like, you know, people are going virtual and, you know, they're finding ways having educating their children in a different way. And I think that's something that the department is taking lightly, that, like, you know, there might be some other alternative ways that parents are looking at education. I mean, this time has given us an opportunity to do a lot of research, I mean, in different things, but especially in the education environment, that, like, maybe parents are looking at, you know, maybe I should look for a school. There might be, like, you know, the independent schools that are coming up. I don't know if you have received, especially in Gauteng, how many schools have popped out since during the COVID-19 period. And, you know, what is the situation? I don't know if you can be able to give us, you know, a background of that. If, like, is it something that we are seeing? Is it a trend that we are seeing? And what is it, what does it mean to the Department of Basic Education if these schools are popping up and, you know, with smaller classes and, you know, using more virtual systems and all that? I don't know if you've seen that, but I'll be interested to maybe to have, you know, some light, maybe you can share some light on, you know, how is how things affected by this new, challenges, or it's not really challenges, like it's forward thinking that we are seeing and being utilized within this COVID period. I think that's about it from me. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Christian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have two very short questions. The first question is about, I'm equally concerned about the dropout rate and, you know, the reason for the dropout rate. I would like to know from both provinces, how have they targeted students that have dropped out? And, you know, I would like to know the steps with regard to, as they return, what were the reasons that they have not returned, if that can be provided. Equally, so I'm concerned in the Northern Cape, there were a number of boreholes sunk at schools. And it seems that the very same schools also procured more water tanks and we're in need of more water. I would like to know the reason why those boreholes that were not sunk, why they are not in working condition, because I know the boreholes were sunk. I would also like to know about the psychosocial support at schools for both educators and learners, if it is outsourced or is there an agreement with the Department of Social Development, how is that done? And in future, wouldn't the department find it necessary to employ or to train psychosocial services support to the learners? Thank you, Chairperson. That's all from me.
Dr. Zembekwayo?
Chair, there's something that's... Okay, oh, sorry.
Can I proceed, Chair?
Yes.
Thank you for this opportunity. I just want to say the issue on dropout rates, the water problems, including the psychosocial problems and address thereof, has been exhausted by my colleagues here. So I just would like to say to the Gauteng province specifically to say, they said ensuring the school functionality in all schools and delivering of schools. But I have noted that, that there is a constant disruption or disturbance in actual fact in a particular school, Lekabile High School in Mamelodi. It's not a constant one, but it's a psychologically worrying type of an infrastructure problem. When I visited that school, there were some very dangerous cracks. It's a double story house, double story school, but it has some cracks on top there that are very dangerous. And I think we have to try by all means to avoid a possible collapse of a school as it happened some time ago. So I'm just urging the Gauteng Education Department to please attend to this particular infrastructure problem before it is too late. And secondly, now of late, the MEC is embarking on a closing of illegal schools, but he has concentrated on the schools in Ivory Park in Gauteng, which caters for the black students. And I just would like to ask, but why now? It's examination time now as we speak. Why should it happen now? And then secondly, why is he choosing some schools? Because I personally asked a question on that needs the MEC to investigate the existence of Hanali Primary School, of which some whistleblowers say it's operated illegally. It's controlled by a white head. And my question is why is there no investigation on this particular school, and why concentrating only on those schools and closing them, and why now? And then to the Northern Cape, I've got only one specific question based on the report on expenditure. The 44 million spent on disinfecting of buildings. I just would like to know, how many buildings are you talking about that requires you as a department to spend 44 million on the disinfecting of those buildings? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Adwan. Honorable Adonis.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also take this opportunity to applaud the two provinces and also welcome the presentations that they have made. I'm fairly satisfied about the information that they have shared with us. I think they cover most of the concerns that we had as a portfolio committee. As we all understand that we found ourselves in a very unfortunate situation of a pandemic, of uncertainties, of not knowing what to expect. So the departments and their leadership, most especially the MECs leading their entourage, their departments, in making sure that they prepare thoroughly for the school reopening. I think we really have to applaud you and salute you for doing the good work that you are doing and keeping the fort, you know. Chairperson, I think I have the same concerns as other members. But to add to the concerns that have been raised already without wasting any precious time is the issue of the vandalism that we find ourselves in as the country. Not only in the schools, the facilities, but it is, I think it's a cancer that is killing the infrastructure that we have in the communities that we're supposed to safeguard as members of South Africa, as communities in our respective constituencies. I think that one needs, you know, all the leaders in different and leaders and different stakeholders to come together to address this matter, because basic education is one of the departments that is losing a lot of money in repairing the schools that are always being vandalized. I think at some point we really need to zoom into that and make sure that we address it thoroughly, because according to myself, that is it's a criminal offense, and it's needed to be addressed as such. But Chairperson, one pressing issue I think is the school dropouts or learner dropouts that we see that is have been reported. We had a report or presentation that was made to us by the zero dropout rate in the past 2 weeks that they shared with the department. They shared a very important information with us, and we also make our own recommendation. And one of them, just to share with the two provinces, was that in tracing the learners, maybe they should also consult with parents. Consult with parents to check where the whereabouts of their children, because when they leave school as learners, they become children to their parents. So it is very crucial that maybe also these two provinces must also embark on making sure that they consult with the parents to actually know and find out whether the kids are, or the learners are, have dropped out, whether still the anxiety of the COVID-19 pandemic, or whether others they have taken other means, you know, in making sure that they keep their children learning. Moreover, on the basis of a homeschooling, and maybe if also the department can give us a little bit of light on the issue of homeschooling, whether it is there in provinces, and whether they have such a application, and whether they have been approved, because there is a process also to be followed for the purpose of homeschooling, Chair. But I would really appreciate that the provinces, as much as they've honored our meeting when shared that information with us, as and when we visited their provinces, we expect to be, you know, to be welcomed to the provinces when we do our oversight. As all of us, Chair, I believe we're here to serve our people and to make sure as the education sector that we provide learners with education that is going to empower them to become better people in the future, and also to contribute progressively in the economy of South Africa and the world as such. Thank you very much, Chair. I really appreciate this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Adwans. I think those are the ends that were up. Any other member that I might be missing?
Chair, I just have two other questions that I would like to ask, please, if it's possible.
Okay, you can proceed.
Okay, I just want to find, let me know the issue that I spoke about regarding the application for home education. I want to just maybe give the name of the applicant that has applied. It's been 6 months that they applied in Gauteng for their child to be home educated. And the person's name is Laetitia Kotia. I don't know if there can be a department can actually be able to trace that application and see how far it is. But it's not only this application, but other applications as well.
to say, like, you know, what is it that you're doing to make sure that, like, you know, they speed up the process, because the last thing that you want is for these processes to be delayed. The other issue is also, is of a child that is, was in grade R at in Gauteng, a relapsed primary school. This child was on grade R. And now when they're supposed to proceed to grade one, they were told, okay, you have to make an application. And it was basically declined. Their application was declined. The name is Zodwa Victorian Pitti. So I don't know if maybe the department can be, and but I would like us maybe to take note of, you know, those people's names, so that, you know, the proper follow-up can be made by us as well, to see, like, you know, how far are they with these applications. And another problem relates to school refusing to deregister learners and provide, you know, in order to provide transfer certificates when requested. Parents need the certificates to apply for home education. Is Gauteng, how many numbers of learners of schools in Gauteng that are refusing learners from the classroom register, or refusing to give them transfer certificates? You know, so it looks like it's a problem there. Like, I received also this basically message that I received, whereby there's the transfer certificates are not provided by the department. Looks like there's also a backlog there. Maybe, you know, I don't know if the department can be able to answer, or maybe just to say, you know, who should we refer these cases to, and how we can communicate with them when we have problems. Because Gauteng, when it comes to not only these issues that I've mentioned, but placement of learners at school is a big thing in Gauteng. And it's difficult sometimes to say, like, you know, who can we talk to who can assist with placing of learners, or even just to give them, you know, responses based on the applications and all that. I find it to be a little bit tedious. And I think that's one of the provinces that need to be more open, or maybe from our committee, that we should know who to refer to when we have this kind of backlogs. Like, I get a lot of calls from people from Gauteng saying, you know, I've applied, I live very close to the school, and I've been told that I haven't been accepted. So what is it that we can do, or who can we always refer these messages to within the department? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mashezi. From my side, I think one must commend both the provinces for their presentations. I think they have outdone themselves. They have presented the manner in which we would have expected them to report. But on both provinces, I am honestly worried about the screeners that are appointed by the department, actually throughout the country. Because it looks like there are no plans for these screeners to continue with what they are doing beyond December holidays. And that is worrying, because COVID is not over. COVID is proceeding next year as well. And the second issue that I want to raise, particularly from the Northern Cape, you know, yesterday Dr. Kim, the one who's leading the National Command Council, has made a remark or a comment that says that Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Free State are the provinces that continuously increase now in terms of infections. And I'm just sitting here and thinking that if there can be a child that is in matric that needs to write and gets to be infected somehow, we all know what is the procedure. You would have to be in quarantine for 10 days. What will happen to that particular child? And do we have plan in place as the department to make sure that if anything like that happens, our children will be able to write and get the results as well. Now,
to the Northern Cape in terms of, I think it's something that I'm missing in the presentation, in terms of the infrastructure, more so your mobile classrooms. Because I know many provinces where there is rurality, they have opted to have more mobile classrooms so that they can be able to accommodate more learners. What is the situation in this in the Northern Cape in terms of that? Now with Gauteng, I've got an interest in understanding how are you dealing with the children that are at home in provision of data. Are you affording to provide the data to the kids that are at home, and how are you handling such provision of data? But more than above, I think that I am honestly happy with how the presentation has been done by both provinces. And without wasting any time, I would hand over. I'm not sure if the DM is still in the meeting. I don't think so, because it's 3:00 now.
I am.
I'm not sure.
I am.
Oh, you still here? Oh, okay. Yes. Okay, let me hand over to you then, DM.
Thank you so much, Chair. And we welcome the questions by members. It shows that the work of the department is taken seriously. Chair, I want to come up front to say on the questions that need specific numbers and specific names of people, we may not be in a position to respond to, because we prepared for the response on COVID-19 as well as the response on Auditor General. We understand that we have these other problems of school, homeschooling, and etc., and people who want to deregister their children. We want to appreciate that Honorable Machesi has given us the names. Then from the names we'll be able to check, and a report or a feedback will come after. Then on the issue of what are we doing about the learners who have not come back. I said it's not for the first time that this question is coming, because coming back of learners, it's a relationship that exists between a parent and the school and the department. Then we expect, and we keep on saying it, we announce it in all the meetings that we hold on the media, we say if parents feel that they are afraid to bring their children back to school, let them come to schools. Yes, I understand that there are those who came and they were refused to deregister their learners. That case will want to follow up and check exactly why did they refuse. But we are encouraging parents to come to schools and say, hey, this year I don't feel comfortable that my child can come. But it will be difficult for the department to go out and search for learners who did not come back. But that message will always be carried out through the media, through all our connections that we have, and the connection that schools have with SGPs and parents, to encourage parents to bring their children to school, to encourage parents to be close to the school and come and work together with teachers to indicate the challenges which their children are facing. But I will allow Gauteng and Northern Cape to respond, but really, Chair, on specifics, allow us not to, because we might talk something that is not closer to the truth, then we'll be seen as coming to mislead the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee, and it's what we don't want to do. We want to give the committees of Parliament authentic numbers and authentic information. So, Gauteng, can you come first? Over to you, HOD.
DM, thank you very much, and Honorable Chairperson and members, thanks for the questions that have been raised. We can confirm, Honorable Machesi asked about learners that have returned or that have not returned, and whether we would find ways to contact and make to determine how when they can come back. Chair, in our presentation, we had spoken about the issue of a survey that we are doing, and that survey is done in a similar manner as we have dealt with how we normally do the 10-day test survey at the beginning of the year. And the whole reason is that post 31st of August, when all grades came back, we decided as a province that maybe closer to the 15th of September, we needed to start to go to each of the schools with a view that we can then determine exactly in terms of the actual tally. And we will be, once the results of the survey have been analyzed, we'll be able to provide even more specific data in relation to the numbers returning and not. We do, however, have numbers of learners that have applied for what we would have called lockdown learning. And in this particular regard, because it also then answers the second question that about learners that decided not to come back. The numbers of learners that we had an option of what we call homeschooling and lockdown learning, those are two different characteristics. The lockdown learning was providing for learners who would have had underlying conditions, but because they could not go to school to interact and mix with learners, they still remained on the register of their schools. And in remaining on the register of their schools, we had a 14-day cycle where a school will provide for learning material and assessment that learners would have had to deal with. And every 14 days, such information, the records would be taken back to schools and teachers will mark and give feedback. So that would have been the lockdown learning. As it relates to homeschooling, what we then did was to make sure that we provide, and Honorable Chair raises this question about how long it takes. Ordinarily, there's a period on which we close for homeschooling in every other year. But because this year we were dealing with a different situation based on the COVID pandemic, we also found that there were many applications that came, but we had to make an assessment of each case on an individual basis. However, the executive authority, the MEC, had given an extension that we will not have a cut-off date. And as applications came in, we were able then to process them. I can confirm, Chairperson and honorable members, like in this past week, we were able to approve an additional 220 applications that had also come. If we were to be checking on legislation and regulation, this would have been applications that would have not approved. However, given the relaxation of the legislation that we had to do, given the COVID pandemic, we were able to provide for such applications. There are no grade 12 learners at the moment who had opted, from our records, that had opted not to finish school in school. As far as our records indicate, that all grade 12 learners, since they returned, they were all able to come back to school. And therefore, the learning of such learners was not on visual platforms, but it was on a face-to-face contact, unless an application would have arisen that we may not have been aware of. Chair, the Honorable Machete also raises an issue about how many schools came up as a result of lockdown learning. In fact, we warned parents and schools, because what COVID began to show us, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, was that when COVID came, there was a mushrooming of, it's not schools, but it's sites that called themselves tuition centers that they were providing online learning. But we had to be careful that there are only two forms of schools that can be provided for in the current context. It is either a public school or an independent school, which has to be registered. Any other thing that falls outside legislation is not recognized in our legislation, and therefore is not considered and determined as a school. And therefore, we were careful that tuition centers that had mushroomed as a result and offering providing for learning were not considered as independent schools. We could then take them as providing for supplementary tuition, which is ordinarily what you get. And therefore, they are not recognized in terms of legislation. And I thought I needed to give that indication, and we warned parents against that in that particular way.
Honorable Christians also asked about the issue of dropout rate, and maybe my response to the question about how we are dealing with the survey will be able to deal with this. But secondly, she asked about the psychosocial services, whether they are outsourced or they are with the DSD. In the province of Gauteng, we work, we provide psychosocial services in conjunction with the Department of Social Development, but there is also, for all other employees, there is an additional OHS support program that is run through the Office of the Premier for all JPG employees, and teachers are also included. They are able to access psychosocial services through the Zinakekelwe program of government, and that is over and above what we've been providing at school level, and that is how the psychosocial services are provided for in the department and in government in Gauteng. Honorable Temgwayo asked about the school. I think that has infrastructure challenges. We can confirm that all schools, as a result of the Driehoek, challenge that we had when the slab fell, we were able to identify and do an assessment of all schools in the province that had structural damages. And as a result of that, an assessment, condition assessment of all these schools has been done, and we are now in the process of managing and ensuring that contractors who have the requisite skills would be able to go and deal with that. And we have taken note of the question that Honorable Member has raised. About the closing of illegal schools, Chair and Honorable Members, I think our view is that any illegal school that operates suggests that it did not meet the minimum regulatory requirements or legal requirements. And in this particular regard, the schools that the MEC closed would close them because many of these illegal schools, firstly, they have unqualified teachers teaching in those schools. Two, they do not meet the occupational health and safety standards that any other thing that happens in those schools will expose the learners and the teachers who would be at the school and everybody else who is at that school. And it is in that context that we would close all of these schools, and we report them to the law enforcement agencies for that matter, because they are also operating outside the ambit of the law, and as a result, they've got to be dealt with. However, what we do is that when we close a school, we make sure that we then place those learners in public schools that can accommodate them, and it becomes our responsibility as a department that we deal with that. On the question of the school, Henley School. Henley School was once a school that was closed because it had low enrollment. It's a school in Jabavu that was closed as a result of low enrollment. But the community came back to say, we're wanting that school to be open because there was a number there were number of learners. But let me confirm that at Henley School, it was not actually grade 1 to 6. We only had the majority of grade R learners attending at that school. And at a particular point, the MEC had taken a view that we must repurpose Henley to become an ECD site of the future. However, based on an evaluation that was done subsequently after the community had come back to the department, Henley was then re-established as a primary school, and we were able to appoint the necessary support for that particular school. And it is in that context that Henley School has now been re-established as a primary school again in that area. We've taken note of the aspect that were raised by Honorable Adjoint in terms of vandalism of schools. Chair, I can confirm that we always raise these matters on vandalism, also at the level of the prof joint, and continuously when we get information, we are able to share it with law enforcement agencies. But our view is that vandalism also, we have just had schools torched this week in the province, a school torched this week in the province by the parents, by some parents of learners in the school, because they say they've been waiting. They burned the same school, and the mobile classrooms that we have given to the schools to help increase and alleviate the burden, and now they would be expecting that we would go back. And our view is that such vandalism, until we've got to find a mechanism that even communities and parents and all of us take responsibility for this particular issue. And I think the way and the manner in which Honorable Adjuns has put it also resonates with the approach that we want him to take in this particular regard. As it relates to the learner dropouts and the advice that we are getting from Honorable Adjuns, we appreciate that indeed parents have also got to be taken into account. Honorable Machesi also raises the issue about grade R and maybe let grade R applications, and maybe let me address myself to that. Honorable Chair, members, grade R in the current context of policy is not necessarily, although it's part of the schooling system, but in terms of policy, you cannot get a learner who's in grade R to have automatic entry into grade one at the same school, because what we know is that grade R is privately funded in many an institute. And what we then have said as a result in Gauteng was that all learners must apply into grade one. And we use the criteria, there's a criteria that is determined that says who then gets into grade one, because you might find that people don't fall within the feeder zone or within the feeder area of the school, and yet they had brought their children there, whereas there are families that are within the feeder zone. And it is in that context that the grade R applications are also treated also in accordance with the policy and the regulation that have been set about the feeder zones as had been determined for in Gauteng. And finally, the issue about who do you refer the matters on admissions to, Chair, the office of the HOD would be available to receive all of that, and we will be able to redirect and deal with the challenges or questions that the honourable members may find and would want them to be resolved. Lastly, Chair, from yourself, there was an issue about the concern about the extension of contracts of COVID screeners. Indeed, we had given the COVID screeners an extension up to the end of the year, but we are reconsidering that also in the context of a new grant that has also been announced by the president that will also be extending. We will be creating additional work opportunities. We are considering to extend, because COVID is still with us, we will be extending the contracts of the young people that we had appointed as COVID screeners, with a view that we can get them to provide for screening services as has been done. And finally, on the issue of children at home and data provision, it's in the context, Chair, as we have spoken about, that lockdown learning learners were always able to get information and rather work from school and do it at home and return it to school in that particular context. There has not been necessarily provision of data in that particular regard. Honorable Chair and honorable members, that is our responses to the questions that have been raised. If there are any other issues, we can still address them further. Thanks a lot, Chairperson.
Chairperson, with regard to the Northern Cape, as I've indicated earlier on, that I'm not sitting with the team, so I will respond to some of the questions, and then we have the DDG that is in Kimberley who will take care of the other questions that I'm not responding to. The first one is on the issue of the private schools, that we don't have any private schools mushrooming in the province. And I mean that the process of application for private school is done accordingly, and we approve where we approve and disapprove those that we are disapproving. So in terms of that, we don't actually have a problem. With regard to the boreholes, yes, it is true that we had boreholes, but also that our province is a province that has been hit hard by drought, and some of the boreholes have just become dry. And in that way, that we had to provide additional tankers to actually have the learners having the water. And Chair, on the issue that there's an issue that was raised in terms of the psychosocial, is it DSD or is it outsourced? We have the various types of approaches that we are actually using in the province. The first one is that we are working with DSD to deal with all the anxiety issues that are actually coming up from the side of the learners and our teachers. But also that we have a special arrangement that we have done for the overage learners and also those learners that have been progressed. There we are actually using private individuals to actually assist those learners, to assist them with the study methods and all those other things. And then, Chair, with regards to the issue of the screeners, that yes, the contract is coming to an end in November. But we have scheduled a discussion with our MEC where we'll have to look at the extending of their service for another 6 months. So that will be a discussion that we are going to have internally, and then thereafter we will, if we have to inform the committee, we'll actually inform the committee via the chairperson. And then for matriculants who become positive, the thing is that in terms of the exam regulations that have been put into place is that that learner will have to quarantine for a period of 10 days. And then thereafter the 10 days that the learner can continue writing, but the subject that they have missed to write will be written at another time, that is probably next year. And then Chair, there was a question you asked about mobiles. With regard to COVID, is that we were actually assisted by the approaches that were taken by the schools in terms of the differentiated timetabling, that is alternate days, alternate weeks, and also the platooning. So there was no need for us to actually provide mobile units. Although we must say that there is a need for us to actually build additional classes in some schools, and that's what we are actually doing. We are actually building additional schools and also additional classrooms for certain schools. But we are not saying here that we don't have a pressure. There is a pressure, especially in the JTG area and also in the Francis Barth area. So Chair, those were the issues that I respond to from my side. I would refer to our DDG, Dr. Ishmael in Kimberley, to respond to the others that I've not dealt with.
Actually, I think you responded to many. Honorable Chair, in terms of the disinfection, we have 647 schools that are disinfected, plus our entire car fleet, and that amounted to about 44 million. There was repeat infections, and we also had in the Pixikastene district, we had somewhat of an epicenter there, and there was a breakout of about 19 schools affected, and we had to go back and re-disinfect. So it took much time to do these things. I think most of the others the HFD did respond to the question in terms of the screener contract. We did make provision to extend the contract for at least an additional 6 months. Thank you, HFD. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Doc. Over to you, Honorable Chair.
No, thank you very much, HOD. Thank you very much from both provinces. Is there any member who feels that he is not adequately responded to?
I think the responses are adequate, Chair.
Member,
long live the DM. Long live DM.
All right. Now, in that instance, then I would thank you very much, DM. Thank you very much to the officials, DPE. Thank you very much, MEC Northern Cape and HOD Gauteng. Now, we will release you and then we will be left with members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the member.
MEC Northern Cape, I'm on my way to Northern Cape.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, DM.
Thank you, DM. I'm waiting for you.
Honorable members, these are the minutes of the 20th of October. We had a virtual meeting at 9 o'clock. We had the briefing from DPE on the
update and status of migration from DSD to basic education and the Bella Bill, and then we considered and adopted the minutes. On page one, it was members who were present in the meeting, and page two, from DPE, and then on page three, it was the parliamentary staff, and then we opened the meeting, and we welcomed the leadership that was there, and then we handed over to the minister to give a political overview, which she has done, and then we got the briefing from the status on migration, which was led by Dr. Kusia. And then after that, we got the presentation on Bella Bill, which was led by Advocate Nisa. And then those were the committee observations that were made by the committee. They move up to page seven. And then page seven, the bottom, there are responses from DPE, which were led by the DM and then the Director General as well gave the responses. And then we had Ms. Gaya as well, who gave some responses, and then Dr. Kusia and Advocate Nisaj. And then we concluded the meeting and we considered and adopted the minutes of the 16th of October. And the meeting was adjourned at 11:49. Any corrections?
Chairperson?
Yes.
No corrections. Can we move for the adoption? I move to adopt the minutes.
Okay. Any seconder? Any member to second the movement of the minutes?
I second, Chair.
Honorable Siwela is seconding. Thank you very much, honorable members. Our next meeting is on next week, Tuesday. We are going to have the presentation on exam readiness. Yes, we are going to have a presentation on exam readiness. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for spending your afternoon, or Friday afternoon, with us. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye, everyone.